Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Tuesday. Today is September 26th. Rachel is still on vacation. She's going to be gone through next Tuesday, I believe, or Wednesday. But I'm joined yet once again by Bridget. Welcome to the show, Bridget.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me.
Isn't it a beautiful day to be on the radio today?
Every day.
Every day is a beautiful day in LA,
folks. Really is.
We only have one season here, except it does get hot and cold sometimes, but as far as the sky, it looks about the same every day.
I start thinking about starting fires around 70 degrees in my fireplace.
In your fireplace. What is she talking about?
No.
People do start fires here when it gets very hot.
Not like that, no. I realized that sounded wrong right when I said it. No, in my fireplace. Yeah. I'm freezing.
I know. It's like here, it never gets cold enough for a fireplace. But, for us,
winter.
It's cold, right?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in a cold place when you grew up?
I did. I'm from the Northeast and from Minnesota. I graduated from high school in Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm used to the, I did my time in the cold.
Yeah, where did you grow up though?
I moved every year and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I moved constantly.
So your parents moved around and stuff? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I'm not sure why we moved as much as we did. It's kind of an ongoing.
Yeah.
Maybe dad was in the CIA. We're not sure.
Exactly. Or maybe he just loves new places, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure parents love moving with five kids every year and a half. I know my mom did. I went to a lot of different schools. New England and the Midwest.
Oh, okay. And you guys are five siblings?
Yes, I'm the oldest of five.
Oh, you were the oldest?
Yes.
Wow, what a responsibility.
I'm the one that got away, though. Yeah, no, I let them all down. No,
really?
No. I did well, and then I kind of just lost it towards the end there. I became a smashing failure.
Well, it depends which way you look at it, right? You can look at it as you're a free spirit, you know. You don't want
a free spirit who ended up in rehab at 19. But
you don't want to conform, so that's where you end up, you know.
That's what they said when I got my aura photographed the other day. I went to this thing in Silver Lake. Yeah, and they do aura photographs.
Yeah,
and
did
they
you
have
see
this.
It?
Yeah, I should have brought it. I'll show you. But you put your hands on this thing. There are these old cameras that some guy made in the 70s, and you go in this little igloo, and they take you put your hands on these little pads, and it measures your electromagnetic whatever. And then it's like a long, you sit still for a minute, don't blink, and then you can see your aura.
Oh.
And in mine, they're like, there's a lot of magenta, which means you're not conformist. My roommate was like, no shit, we didn't need to drive all the way to Silver Lake to find that out.
Did you ever do readings astrology, numerology, any of these things?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did you think? I mean, was it pretty accurate? Did it help you in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think they're good signposts. So whatever you're thinking about when someone pulls a card is less about prediction and more about what you're focusing on. So if someone was to pull a card and be like, oh, this means that your love life, is whatever comes to mind immediately, I think you can use it as a way to look at what you might be focusing on.
Right, because other people might see it anyway. But
right.
You can get that from a therapist, too. You know, you don't have to go.
Yeah, and I went to a healer recently. I'm a hippie at heart.
Yeah.
She was amazing. But again, she was having me say these very simple statements like, I am lovable. And then she would, and just these beliefs that you may or may not have about yourself. And I couldn't even say, I don't believe it. When I said it, I was like, wow, I don't freaking believe that. You know, certain things that she had me say. And so, again, she's not some magician. She's just helping me because I felt like with therapy, you can do a lot of work consciously, right. Whereas there's still all these subconscious beliefs that we have from our childhood and patterns. And like we were talking to the mentalist yesterday, all those patterns that we've just created in our minds that we can't, that we're not even aware of. We're just unconsciously acting them out. And she was really good at helping me see a lot of those beliefs that
see,
I have.
So if it helps, you know, then it can't be that bad, you know?
I say whatever there works you go, for people. You know? I don't judge people for it. If you're religious and you're, if you, whatever you need to like make it through, as long as you're not hurting other people, I very non-judgmental about what people use to get through being human. It can be very, you know, it's sticky and messy.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, in a few minutes, our guest will join us. We're going to talk a lot about this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's going to be cool. He's totally multi-talented. I'm really looking forward to it. I know you're eager to talk, but you're going to have to wait a few minutes because we have to... Now, I wanted to ask you about the... you heard about the NFL thing over the weekend,
yes,
right? It's very controversial. I don't know if I want to talk about it really, but...
I'm a free speech absolutist.
Yeah, so what do you feel?
I feel
you
that...
you feel that it's okay?
Civil rights and protesting are linked in this country, so I think it's fine. You
right,
know,
but is that the place in football games where these people get paid millions of dollars, we pay the money... to play and entertain
they're
us
not
and
just,
not to make statements.
Yeah, but that's a very, like, I don't know. That
I mean, what are they
to
protesting
to say that they're
anyway?
Not human, just to be like, oh, you know, that's that stay. I
no, but
I do
why
believe
not human?
They,
it's just all I'm saying is maybe this is
for
not
me,
the right
I'm just
venue.
Like, do your job. It's like,
right.
I don't care that they protest, but I'm like, there's so many other problems. And
right.
Football players are there to play a sport and... it's entertainment, and politicians should be trying to help us, the American people. I think the people who lose in all of this are the American people because
always.
They're not being entertained, and the politicians are focusing on the wrong thing, and they're just like, fuck everything. So
right.
I don't know.
Are, you
know it's complicated, and I don't.
Yeah, I just don't understand is what they are protesting exactly. I mean, what are you united for? Against the president?
No, he's made, that's what it's been turned into. That's not what the original
into, right?
protest
yeah,
was
yeah,
because
when Kaepernick was doing this, it was also about making a statement and everything. Remember, he was
yeah,
the first
it was about police
knee.
Brutality.
Right.
That's what the
oh,
original
protest.
Oh, yeah,
that was police brutality, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now it's been conflated with all of this. You know, I mean, to be fair, he chose that moment. Kaepernick chose that moment to protest. He chose using the flag and the anthem as the moment to protest police brutality. So it wasn't like someone just made the flag and the anthem about protest. That was he was the one who chose that moment to protest. But who cares? It's not like they're on the field playing. He's not taking a knee in the middle of the game.
Right.
So it's just I think it's kind of gone bonkers, and it generates a lot of conversation and a lot of really horrible think pieces. And I
it's complicated. I mean, you know, the thing is we're really divided. And, you know, everybody's like looking at each other as like enemies. You
right.
Know?
And that's what, and I think for Trump to make that, to say that protesting is against the American flag and the anthem, to try and turn this into a protesting versus patriotism, part of patriotism is protesting.
Right.
That is inherent to being American, is the right to fucking protest.
Right.
So, to make protesting something that's anti-American is very dangerous. That's why that's how I feel about it.
Right. Okay, but a lot of people feel strongly about the flag and the national anthem as well, you know?
Yeah, and again, that's like the same people who are, you know...
I think they're taking the attention away from the anthem itself and why we play it in the first place, you know, and respect it and everything. It's supposed to unite us.
It is.
You know, but I think this protesting divides us again.
Somebody on Twitter was like, she's a comedian, she's like, this entire fucking country was created as an act of protest. You know, You can't.
That's true.
Lose. And there's that movie, The American President, which I love, and it's Aaron Sorkin wrote it, and he gives this great speech at the end of it where he's like, "You can't stand up and be proud of your flag unless you can respect the same someone that you completely disagree with burning that same flag that you respect. That is the heart of our country, is the right to dissent and the right to disagree."
Right, but the flag is supposed to represent our pride, our everything. If you burn it, so you okay with burning flags?
It is our right. It's part of our right as
no,
Americans.
No, it is a right. But I'm
a free speech absolutist. That is that we have the freedom to burn that flag. Mm. Whether other people disagree with that, I can burn the flag and they can say you're a fucking idiot for burning the flag. That's their right too.
Right.
And that's what you're seeing is people who are protesting and people are saying you're an idiot for protesting.
Right.
I don't know that. I just feel like for the president to be getting so heavily involved in it, there's so many. Puerto Rico is they're American citizens, and there's nobody's helping them.
Right. No, I mean, look, he's the wrong man at the wrong time, and you know, we'll see. I mean, I think we already know pretty much everything about him. You know, it's not like it's a revelation every day he comes up with something new. You know, but it's hard to support.
But
something
he steals
like this.
All the attention.
Right,
That's what
because
narcissists
that's who he is,
do.
You
well,
know,
narcissists
he's a celebrity.
Do that.
Yeah,
not just a celebrity.
He always
like
wanted
a,
that attention. You know, I mean, I remember he would always, take like. You know, I mean, he would just, like, get all the attention. That's what he wanted. I mean, do you remember the character that he played himself on The Apprentice, you know?
Yeah.
And he was, like, this tough, you know. But he turned out to be, you know, very divisive. But that's for another conversation, because I think the division started a long time ago. But
It did. Yeah, it's all, you can't lance a boil until it comes to the surface.
Yeah,
I think
it doesn't start overnight. You know?
I think ultimately all of this, I have a deep faith that, you know, not necessarily everything happens for a reason, but everything happens.
Right.
And so it gives us an opportunity to have these discussions to grow, and ultimately things might get worse before they get better. But I do have a faith that things kind of unfold the way they should.
Yeah.
Because that's the way they're unfolding.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guest right now. He can join the conversation. And of course, we're going to talk about him and everything. We're joined by the incredible Ted McGrath. Welcome to the show, Ted.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, I don't know if you're incredible yet, but we're going to find out soon enough, right?
We will. In minutes, you will know.
That's cool. You weren't nice green. I'm glad we're not on the video show, because we have a green screen. and people wear green and they disappear in the picture. So always have to tell them, you know. But
perfect.
Green is pretty cool, right?
I wanted to make you feel at home, like the green screen is here.
Yeah, right? I do feel at home.
I feel like we should be on a Christmas card. I'm wearing red.
So, Ted, as we read about you, you're multi-talented and everything. You're very handsome.
Thank you.
You're full of energy and everything. Are you an Angeleno? Did you grow up here?
No, I grew up in New Jersey.
Really?
I grew up in New Jersey, Milburn, New Jersey, also Point Pleasant, the Jersey Shore, so... I'm a Jersey guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You don't seem like it. I don't know what a Jersey guy seems like.
Yeah, you know.
But, you know, they come across as these tough soprano type of guys.
Well, hey, my first 17 years, I lost some of that. You know, I went to Florida after that, and then I came out here to California.
Really?
Yeah. So I've been in California for about 9 years.
Oh, so it's home for you now.
Yeah.
Where in Florida did you go to?
I was in Orlando.
And you lived there for a while?
I lived there for like 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did you find there that took you there?
Well, my dad was there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I wanted to go out there, be close to my dad.
Okay.
And then I went to school there.
Oh.
And I played tennis. I played collegiate tennis.
Yeah?
Yeah, I played tennis for 4 years. And then after I graduated, I went into the insurance business.
Really?
Yeah.
So were you an athlete early on in your life?
I was. I was a baseball player. And I had to decide in high school whether I wanted to play tennis or baseball because they were the same season.
Really?
So I chose tennis. I think more for, like, you know, battling, you know, the inner demons and stuff, like an individualistic wow. sport, you know. So tennis was a freaking journey for me.
Really?
It was a crazy journey.
So it was more than just a sport for you. It was a transformation?
It was a transformation, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, getting to know myself, being responsible for when I lost. It was only me that I could, you know, blame.
That's true, right?
And then going through that journey of, like, you know, rising up. When I went to college, I played with guys who used to play pro.
Yeah.
And I was the worst guy on the team.
Really?
Yeah, I walked on the team, worst guy on the team. Coach is like, don't try out ever. He's like, you shouldn't even try out for this team because I came to hit with them for 10 minutes.
Right.
And I showed up the next season and I tried out. He was surprised to see me.
Really?
And I made it. I walked on. I beat out all of the walk-on players and I got taken
really?
On the team. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There we go, an achiever here,
yep.
you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Listen, move the cord of your mic to the other side over there so you're more comfortable.
There you go.
Now, are you feeling better now? Because I keep, like, getting distracted by this because I'm thinking maybe it's pulling on your ear or something.
It's a noose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Now, I want you to feel comfortable. We're here for a long ride.
Yes.
Ted McGrath, so you were in Florida for a while. You see, he moved where his dad was. I wish my son would stay here where his dad is, you know, but he went away to San Francisco. But he's going to school, so hopefully he'll come back, you know.
Yeah.
But it's cool. So did you grow up with your mom and then you moved to be with
your
dad?
Grew up with my mom because my parents got divorced when I was young.
Right.
And then I always wanted to be closer to my dad, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I went out there to be closer with him.
Yeah.
And it was great. You know, I had 4 years. My brother also went to the same college as me and we were the same year. So it was a wild journey. And my stepbrother. So three of us were seniors at the same year in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, what an interesting thing.
It was a madhouse.
How many siblings do you have?
I have one brother, blood brother, and then I have stepbrothers too.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you the oldest in your
I'm the youngest, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they used to beat the crap out of me when I was
really?
A kid. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. But I think I got determined from that, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Cool. Let me ask you this. How old were you when you decided you wanted to live with your dad? Can I ask that?
You know, I think... You know,
I'm very curious.
I know.
It's a good question. You know,
how mature are you at that point when you make that decision?
You know, I think it was more like... When I was probably, my dad moved to Florida when I was like 10.
Okay.
So it was more like I wanted to be closer to him.
Right.
So I think as I got into my teens, I was like, you know, I want to be around my dad.
Right.
My mom was amazing, and I just wanted to be closer to him and spend time with him. So
yeah.
I went out to college there.
Yeah. Wow.
I moved in with my dad when I was mid high school. My parents got divorced, and I did the same thing.
Yeah,
really?
I just wanted to be. Yeah.
Was it like? Do you feel it was a good decision for you?
I ended up going back, but it's because I felt guilty for leaving my mom and my sisters behind. But my brother went and lived with my dad, and he stayed when he was younger than even me, and so he ended up staying with my dad. And so, yeah, I think too, when you're a man, you know, it's important. To be around that male influence.
Yeah,
and
it really
I understand
is, you know,
why my brother did it.
And as a father, you know, I mean, I was very involved with my kids from the moment they were born, you know. But my son was born 6 months before we got divorced or before we separated. So he never got to see what it's like to have a whole family in the house, you know. So both of them grew very close to their mom and, you know, how moms sometimes, well, in my case, let's say, sort of like, you know, keeps the kids to herself, you know. I mean, I was with them involved. I would take him from school every day and do homework with them. It's not like the dad that sees the, you know, the kids after divorce like once every 2 weeks or only on the weekend.
Right, yeah.
I was very involved, you know. And unfortunately... They've really clung to their mom. And they're in their 20s now, and they still are clinging to their mom. But, you know, so it's not... We're not as close as we used to be, but I hope it turns around after they get a little older.
I'm close with both now, so I'm very fortunate. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they're still trying to find a place. You seem to know where you found yourself pretty much, right?
Oh, totally. But it was a journey to find, like, to you know, make sure I got closer to both the relationships in my family, both my mom and both my dad.
Did you feel, like, a sense of responsibility to bring them together or something? Or?
Not as much to bring them together, but to have good relationships with both.
With both,
you know,
right?
I felt that, and I wanted that, and I, you know, for years I was distant because I got caught up in drugs and alcohol, and then my career, and so for years and years I was very, very distant. And now, we're really in a place where I spend time with them frequently. Even though my dad's in Florida, my mom's in New Jersey, I probably see them both at least four times a year.
Oh, wow. And you probably talk a lot, too, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We talk, you know, we talk about it once a week or so.
Yeah, that's cool. You see, that's the way it should be, man. Well, you see, you know how to treat your parents, you know. So
I'm learning as I get more wisdom, you know. They deserve it, though. You know, they did a great job.
Don't they, though?
All parents do.
I mean, you know, all parents do. Yeah. I mean, look, they have it in the Ten Commandments, you know. Whether you believe it or not, it says respect your parents, you know.
Yeah.
And because there's something to it, you know. And all I can tell you is now my parents are aging and everything. We take constant care of them all the time. Because you feel like, you know, they put in so much into me. How can I not?
Totally. It's a responsibility. Right. As we get older, you know, we pour back into them, too.
So, yeah, that's true.
You know.
So how did you get involved in drugs and alcohol? Was that like in college?
You know, yeah. I mean, drugs was my senior year in college.
Okay.
So that's when things started to kind of twirl down for me a little bit.
What kind of drugs were you using?
Well, initially, I started out with ecstasy.
Okay.
So I remember when I first discovered ecstasy, I was like, this is the greatest thing in the world, you know?
Right. And the kids were all like that, too. So.
Yeah, you know, and it was interesting because then I got into cocaine. But it wasn't like a thing that was like every night. It started off as like once a month. But my tennis career started to dwindle. And that's the thing about drugs, you know. For me, I didn't realize that like I was starting to have that separation from my goals of the things that I wanted.
Right.
And I started to kind of give up my persistence in my tennis career my senior year.
Wow.
And I didn't know why, you know. And I only found out later that a lot of it was because I got involved in drugs, you know.
Right. And they take most of your energy, right? I mean, you don't focus on anything else.
You know, you don't realize it at the time because it's like you get this high and you have these stories and experiences. But over time, it starts to suppress, you know, and so that's what happened to me. And over time, you know, eventually I woke up, you know, 21 years old on the kitchen floor overdosing from drugs.
Wow. So that was the bottom for you.
That was the bottom. Yeah. It was interesting because I started out in the insurance business when I was 21. And initially I wanted to go into business with my dad, but my dad's business was not doing well. So he kind of shut down his business. And so then I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And for me, I was like, well, maybe I'll go in the financial business. So I got in the insurance business with a company called New York Life.
Uh-huh.
And I had a mentor who, like, first day, he was like, you know, he's like, you can make six figures your first year
really?
In this business. Yeah. Because he saw something in me.
Yeah.
And, like,
we had
this great conversation, amazing guy. And so I put my head down and I was like, I'm going to make six figures. And for me, it wasn't about the money. It was just about getting the approval of like, wow, if I make six figures, I'll get approval.
Right.
And the night I cracked six figures, I went out that night. It was like celebration time and, you know, drugs, alcohol. And that night, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm on the kitchen floor, overdose, bag of cocaine.
Oh, my God.
Two pills of ecstasy, 15 drinks of alcohol, soul coming out of my body. And
really?
Yeah, it was it. It was my first real spiritual experience, which like was a negative spiritual experience. The first time I knew that I was more than a body because, and I didn't have this realization until years later, but I was leaving my body.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've definitely been there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
With drugs. Yep. Where I was like, oh, I could just float away right now and be done and realize that, you see it when you see dead people, you're like, especially people you knew. I feel like you're aware of the, so that person isn't there anymore.
Right.
It's just like the meat suit is left over.
Yeah.
Right.
And, but I did, I've had the experience of feeling that separation occurring.
Yeah, totally.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Yeah. And like holding on to the body. It's the weirdest thing.
Whoa.
Because I wanted to stay. I didn't want to leave.
Right.
Like I wanted to stay, but I was searching for answers to make me feel good, you know, and clearly didn't
How
work.
Long a process do you think it was? Like while you were going through
It was like my brother was there with me and it was like, it was over an hour.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, you know, it was weird. And in my one man show, my theater show, I actually tell that story.
Yeah.
So people have this experience of seeing what it's like.
Wow, very cool. So did you believe in souls, spirits before that?
Hell no. I didn't believe in anything. No. Now I do to the nth degree.
You believe in six figures.
I believe in six figures, right?
Achieving.
Yeah, I believed in all the things that I think in society that people, you know, like it's great to make money. And it's great to make money to, you know, also have a great life, but also contribute to other people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think a lot of times for me, I was climbing the wrong ladder.
Right.
Like I thought success was, you know, drugs and alcohol and sex and money and all these things. And I think a lot of people still believe that today. Today, I have a totally different perspective on what success is.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. You see, and that's the thing. People have to go through that transformation, and often you hit bottom before you look up, you know? It's like, and then you start going, well, wait a minute, there's something bigger than me here, you know? I remember when I was really depressed during the early days when of the onset of my bipolar disorder, I would like, you know, I would go nuts, and I felt there's no order in the universe. It's all chaotic, you know?
Right.
I'm just like a victim of some friggin' thing, you know? And then, but then I went into a spiritual thing for a year, and you know, the way I emerged is a person that is a lot more, I realized there is order in the universe, you know? Everything is like,
so much order.
There's so much order, you know?
Look at the moons and the seasons.
And the problems are not around me. The problems are inside, you know, and that's where it comes from, right?
Yep.
So now the drugs, did you feel also you got into it? Did you have like any, do you think, emotional reason for getting into them?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I had many reasons. You know, one of the things I talk about in my life story that I share is, you know, when I was a kid and my parents did get divorced, you know, I made up a lot of reasons why I wasn't good enough, or you know, I think a lot of my striving for success was to go get approval, you know, to go stand out and be recognized and things of that nature.
Right. And that's how we measure it with money and success, right? Like physical, material success.
Yeah. Right. And then even as a kid, you know, like it wasn't like, you know, the weight of like my parents, they got divorced and that was the only thing. There were lots of things as a kid. That happened. I had lots of great experiences, but I had some experiences that I held on to that weren't so great. You know, I had experiences around sex as a kid with an older girl. I had experience with boys when I was really young. So I was really like at like 9 years old, really screwed up around sex. Like, what the hell is going on? So
and
those
many
were other
kids
reasons
are
for
like
shutting
that,
down.
You know,
yeah.
I think sex fucks up all of us. You know? I really do. You know, at an early age, you know, something happens. We discover something,
right?
You know.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, these things need to be shared because we've all, I wouldn't say all of us because I don't know everybody, but a lot of people I run into had weird things around sex as a young kid. And for me, I held these things in, you know, for 30 years. And then all of a sudden I started communicating about it. And then, you know, I'd have people after my one-man show come up to me and go, hey, I had this experience too. And I'm like, yeah, it's like talking about cream cheese now, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like it's not a big deal, right?
Right.
But we sometimes carry these things and we feel trapped not being able to communicate. And I think part of my job is to be a communicator, to like express so people feel like, wow, I can talk about my life.
So you can open up,
shame.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
To be able to talk about, you know, being with boys when you're young and stuff is not something easy.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, you know?
You know, you're nine, you rub your penis against another boy. What the hell, you know? Seriously, right?
Yeah.
And you got to make a light of it, too, because it's not a big deal. I'm not saying all boys should go do that stuff.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, you're a curious kid.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
What
and
is
sometimes
this thing?
Just for lack of a vagina, you figure, okay, I'll show.
Right, exactly.
I'll
you
look
know?
At a naked boy instead.
Yeah.
You know, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, you know, but to be able to come out with that and everything, that's pretty cool. But but you like girls?
Yeah,
I
have a beautiful girlfriend for 3 years now.
Wow, how cool is that?
It's amazing. That was like one of the things in my life that I wanted was to have a relationship, and I couldn't figure out why I would get in these relationships and screw things up or back out or retreat, you know?
Yeah.
So now I'm having an unbelievable relationship, total honesty, like just total great communication, and it's fantastic.
Wow, that's unbelievable. And you seem like to be comfortable in your own skin, discuss yourself and everything.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, I mean, without it, you wouldn't be able to have a one-man show like you do.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly. So we'll talk about that in a little bit as we get to it. You know, I'm like curious so much about how you ended up here.
You know? I think I love it.
Yeah.
Great.
So we're joined by Ted McGrath, and you have a one-man show. Let's talk a little bit about that then. What's it called, the show?
It's called Good Enough.
Good Enough.
Yeah.
And very appropriately, right, to what we're talking about.
Totally.
Yeah.
So how did the idea come about for you? I mean, to do a one-man show cannot be easy, right?
No,
I mean,
no.
To stand alone in front of an audience and hope to really please each and every one of them.
Yeah.
Wow. That takes a lot of balls.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Do you feel your tennis did it help inform your ability to do this? Just being responsible and having that pressure of everything being on you.
Totally. Yeah, athletics like was a huge, huge. I mean, you know, my junior year in college. Well, my freshman year, my coach said you'd never start. You know.
Yeah.
My sophomore year, two scholarship players went down with injuries, and then I went on and started, and I lost 28 out of 30 matches.
Mm-hmm.
So to lose that much and mm-hmm. to be defeated that much, and to continue to persevere. And then eventually go out and, you know, start winning and then get elected co-captain of my team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those things of perseverance, you know, make me know that I can go into any space. Like I did it in the speaking space. I'm doing it in the theater space. Now I'm starting to go into films. So for me, I know I can go into any space and succeed because I have the persistence and I have the ability.
Sure.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So the show is good enough. And so people can actually come out and see you.
Yep.
Right? And you have the shows every so often? And
yeah, like, you know, that? Well, sometimes we'll have them every couple weeks, sometimes once a month.
Where do you have them?
Different places. Like, I just did one in Las Vegas last month.
Uh-huh.
Nice. There's one coming up here in Los Angeles at the Celebrity Center. So it's here in L.A. and Hollywood. So we just have them in different places. And then I'll be doing one in Florida after that, where I'm getting invited to go to a conference and do it there.
Very nice. Yeah. So you're... So it's not only an entertaining show, but an inspirational show. So what do you do, actually? Do you tell your life story? How does it go?
Yeah, I tell my life story, and then I play characters.
Oh, I see. From your life?
Yeah. Or? So I'll play characters from my life, and, you know, whether it's my boss or whether it's, you know, crazy guys in the club or, uh-huh. you know, whether it's my tennis coach or, you know, I'll just play these different characters through, and I'll tell the story. So I'll tell the story and then I'll go in and out different characters.
Right. And you obviously got a great story, you know. Did you put it in a book yet or is that going to happen one day?
You know, yeah. I mean, I've written a book before for my speaking business, but for me it was like it's the show is the focus of like the art right now.
Right.
So I guess we could like put it up into a book and get it out, but I want to get more people to come to the show and experience the story.
Yeah, that's very cool. So you know, I mean it's very interesting, right? Because I mean, look, even as a comic, you go up for a few minutes, you know, you hold an audience and stuff, but to do something like this and to really bring your own story across, very courageous what you're doing.
Yeah.
Know?
So you play other characters in your story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So now, how did you get into acting? Now, did you actually take some training or how did that come about?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like four years ago when I started to got the idea for the show, I saw a guy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at a seminar and there was this guy up on stage named Bo Eason and he was a professional football player. And he did a one-man show on his life story as a football player.
Yeah, I remember the name. What was it, like in the 70s, 80s or something?
Yeah, he was like in the 80s. His brother was Tony Eason, who was the quarterback for the Patriots. And he played for like the Oilers where he was a safety.
Okay.
So I watched his show and I saw it and I stood up and I'm like, that's what I want to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, how cool is that? Yeah. Because that's the ultimate like success of like, here's me, give me all the attention, you know? Because you said you looked for that recognition, you know?
Totally. And you know, for me, it was like, I think the journey, there's an element of it, of course, this recognition. There's an element of like, hey, I know I have ability and I know I have ability to inspire people. So like doing that and wanting to experience that as myself, It's a great journey to just experience that expression. And then the other thing is just the pure desire to tell a story that really transforms people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, I did the show in Vegas, and at the end of the show, people walked up, and there was a whole line of people. And my favorite part was just talking to every single person and people coming to tell me things about their life that some of them had never told anybody.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because I bear it all in the show.
Yeah,
and we
right?
also make fun of it, too. So it's not like this drama. Like
right.
It's not a pity party. It's drama, but then we make light of it, you know?
Right.
And
right.
I think that's important. Like, not to be like this sympathy story, but to be more like a dramatic, inspirational story that tells truth. But also, like, it's light and it's, you know, there's comedy in it, too.
Yeah.
So where did you get the confidence to inspire people?
You know,
Is that a weird question?
No, it's a great question.
No, I mean, that's really the essence of it all. How did you end up where you are today?
Because
you
know, I feel like I have people will sometimes be like, oh, you're writing and it's inspiring. And I'm not comfortable accepting that compliment at all.
Right.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Yeah. Why is that? Have you ever thought about that.
Well, because, there's a part of it that feels slightly egotistical. Like, I'm this person who can inspire. Like, who am I to? I'm just telling my story. I try to be as truthful as I can be, and so I don't feel like I'm going in with the intention of being some kind of inspiration. Yeah. Maybe I should, so I'm not like just a disaster. But that's one part of it. The other part I think is just not feeling good enough. I mean, I'm assuming that's what
not
this is about.
Not being able to take compliments.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Not feeling like that imposter syndrome. I think a lot of people, we were talking about this. I just wrote an essay about this today, feeling like don't let perfection be the enemy of good. So because I was always such a perfectionist, when I wasn't perfect, I have a lot of admiration for you for being able to lose that much. Because for me, and I was just writing this and came to the awareness this morning that I think part of the reason that I was injured so often was because I couldn't be great at sports. Mm. So I was just always injured.
Yeah.
And whether I subconsciously was like, well, I can't be this great, and I actually said tennis star, then I might as well just kind of be injured. And I couldn't handle being mediocre.
Yeah.
And
I had that too.
Very interesting.
I would actually I injured myself a few times before big things, to where like I was gonna, like in my high school tennis team, I was gonna play singles, and like I trained and trained and trained. I threw my back right before the match.
Yeah, I think it's mean, even this past, I got sober almost 4 years ago, and like dead sober, and I think even in the past 4 years, I've noticed I've been so injured, and that's why I went to this healer, was because I'm like, I feel like I still have some victim mentality.
Yeah.
Whether it's conscious or not, I've looked at a lot of it consciously, but there's this sense of victimhood that, whether it's like karma or whatever, whether it's past life or whatever you believe in, or even this life, belief systems, how do I overcome that? Because I do think the body and the mind are so connected.
Totally.
In ways that we're not even... only beginning to become aware of, that it is not an accident that I'm getting all these freak injuries now that things are in my life are a little bit more stable and
It is psychological.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely do. Now,
how do you not self-destruct?
Yeah. Ted, let me ask you this, though. I mean, I'm looking up some of the things here, some of the notes I didn't see before. So...
I want to know
what it says here that he made millions. Okay, so millions of dollars is what I assume you've made.
Yeah, I have a multi-million-dollar company.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so impressed with his confidence.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, you know. The next Tony Robbins. I mean, you're Tony Robbins for the millennials. There you go.
Yeah.
You have a lot of inspiration. You have the confidence. You have the story.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're well qualified to be an international speaker in my book. You
know,
because, thanks. Because you've pretty much figured out... what it takes, I guess, right? So tell us a little bit about that. How did this come about?
Well, how did I come about speaking and doing that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I early on at 21 years old, when I was in the insurance business, I took a coaching program, and it was just very self-reflective. It was just very like, what's your long-term vision of your life? Like, you know, why are you here? And I knew, like 21 years old, I was like, I want to be one of the most inspirational people on the planet. I want to help people transform their lives. I want to make a massive difference in the world. So there's a difference between knowing and actually going to do, right?
Right.
So while I knew in my knowing that this is what I was here to do, my programming of how I was supposed to operate in the world was, okay, go make money, go do this thing, because if you make money, you'll get status, and you know, if you know, you rise up in the ranks of corporate America, you'll be great and you'll be recognized.
Right.
But I, you know, 21, I started doing seminars. Like, my boss was like, let's do a seminar. I was like, let's do it. So I was always the dive in type.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and my first seminar at 21, I'll never forget, like, the audience was there. There's like 40 people. We did like this, you know, dinner, and it was like a 90-minute talk, and I was up in front of the audience, and I couldn't even look at the people.
Yeah.
Really?
So I was like pacing back and forth,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. Like back and forth, pacing. and I couldn't even look at the people. But that was my first experience with it, you know? So I had some training at a young age to get up in front of people. And then I had another experience where I was out drinking all weekend. And then I had to go into this CPA firm and go give a talk to like 10 CPAs. And I walk in and I'm still hungover. And I start giving the talk and I totally memorize the talk, right? So I didn't really have any thoughts of my own. It was just like memorization, right? And 2 minutes in, I just forget my lines.
Yeah.
I go completely blank. And I start sweating profusely.
Wow.
Like buckets of sweat pouring out of me. Right. And I had nothing to say. I almost passed out on stage.
Really?
Yeah, it was horrible.
No, I've been there. I do stand up comedy.
Huh?
Yeah.
All the eyes on you, my God.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Those were my speaking experiences initially. And then when I left New York Life around 28, I decided, like, you know, I was one of the top partners in the company. So I rose to the ranks in management and leadership. And, you know, right around that time, I was like, what do I want to do with my life? Like, is this really all there is to my life? And that's when I left to go find entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And I figured entrepreneurship would be freedom because I'd be outside a company and I'd be doing my own thing. And I moved out to California and I buy the $1 million condo and I've got the $100,000 car and I've got all these things that I think are going to make me happy and freedom as an entrepreneur. You know, within two years, I'm broke. You know, my house in foreclosure, my car, my motorcycle, everything's being
towed. Now, how did you achieve them in the first place? In the insurance
business?
Now, how did you get into it? Is that what you took in college? Because we didn't ask really what you learned.
You know
in
what?
College.
Default. Really? There was no, like, you know, I majored in economics for purely no better option.
Mm. Really?
I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I took an intro to theater class, and I liked that. I also took English. So I was a writer, and my English teacher begged me to be an English major. I was like, there's no money in that.
Right. Yeah.
So I suppressed my creativity and go, okay, I'll go finance. Like, economics was the worst course ever.
Yeah, right? Very, very dry.
So when you lost everything coming out to California, then what happened after that?
Then I'm like, what do I really want to do? Because my whole identity was tied up in this false persona.
Mm.
So then I'm like, what do I really want to do? And then I went back to, like, the things that made me happy, which was, I remember the times where I spoke. I remember the times where I took coaching courses where coaches helped me. I was like, I want to help people. I want to coach. I want to speak. So I strapped up my boots, right? And I was like, let me go out and take what I've learned. Like, I knew stuff about sales. I knew stuff about business. So let me go start coaching people. And I went and got a coaching client. And that was the beginning.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, and I don't want to give out the whole story. And we got to give people a little bit of, a reason to come to the show. Because I'm thinking we're revealing everything. I know. Because I want to see how you do the characters and everything. You know, that'd be cool. So you really went through that finance career in the beginning where they made a lot of money and everything. So did we ask you how you lost it all? I mean, how did you how did you get so broke?
Just that's a great question.
No, I'm
that's
like, I don't
really
think
good question.
We asked him. Because you asked him something about, you know, the money. How did you make the money? Go ahead.
You know, like, just recklessness.
Really?
Yeah, like, you
know. You spent on everything, like you said, the car.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when I was making the money, you know, I was in South Beach every weekend spending $1,000, $2,000 on bottle service.
Yeah, well.
Then when I wasn't making the money, the pattern still stayed because, you know, I was an entrepreneur and we were trying to grow our business, which required, like, you know, bootstrapping it. So we weren't taking any salary from the business. And I still had some savings, but I was still out on the weekends, go living that life. Like, I shouldn't have bought, you know, it was almost $1 million condo when I didn't have an income coming in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, how stupid was that?
Right. So you were drunk on your success, really, on your financial success.
You know what? I was drunk mostly Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Monday would come, and, you know, I'd be up at 5 o'clock in the morning going to the gym. So I'd switch the hat, put on the mask.
Right.
And go and work.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, you were saying he was drunk on success?
I'm drunk on success.
Oh, yeah.
Misunderstood.
Yeah, you're right. I was drunk on success.
Yeah,
that too.
Like, I was drunk Friday and Saturday, but I was drunk all week.
Right,
on success.
Drunk on success, so I was drunk 24/7.
Yeah. That's funny. Wow, Ted McGrath, what a man. So now I wanted to ask you, since you were a rich kid at one point, it's true that it attracts the beautiful girls, right? When you have a lot of money.
Where are we going?
No, because I'm curious, who are the guys that actually have the yachts to take these chicks? Because
they're
that's
not
where you
guys
see
like
them.
Ted,
you see,
let me tell you.
Well, maybe back then, I don't know, you had the money for the yachts.
You know, like, I think for me, like, I wasn't a millionaire, you know? Right. I was making, in my 20s, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
By the way, you have to be a, like, quarter of a billionaire at least to have a yacht.
Yeah.
Not, like, a millionaire.
No, but what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be your yacht, you know what I'm saying? But even if you have enough money to rent one or whatever, you still can attract the chicks, you know?
Here was
that's
yeah,
where they
course.
Go. You go on Instagram. That's where all they all are. And I go, well, who are the guys that are getting them? They must be making a lot of money.
But what are you attracting to? I mean,
no, exactly. Money, hungry women. You know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, for me, I've always known I'm a good looking guy,
right?
But I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
in my
20s,
like, you know, because I couldn't communicate a lot, you know, I wasn't a good communicator. So I didn't feel like I could go communicate with, like, the most beautiful women.
Yeah,
I
would couldn't approach them and stuff,
yeah,
right?
But I would get drunk and I would end up with them, you know?
Right, right.
And my friends always thought, like, oh, he's always with the women. He's always got the women. And I was like, I never felt like I had the women because I felt like I had to get drunk to get the women. You
yeah,
know?
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, everybody's got an inside story and you got to be – and that's the thing. And I'm sure there's a lot more to peel of this onion here that you presented to us with, which is your life, you know. And that's amazing. So tell people again where they can go, websites, social media, come see you.
You can just go to my website, tedmcrathbrands.com. So you'll see it there. Like, you'll see my brand, Message to Millions is one of my brands, Superstar Speaker is one of my brands. And you'll see right there the show Good Enough. Like, you can click on it. It'll take you to the information on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's see. Hold on a second. Okay, so TedMcGrathBrands.com.
Yeah.
And you can see all the stuff. I mean, this is amazing. You can find out more. So what was that program you just mentioned?
Message to Millions?
Message to Millions. It's right in front
of
me.
That's my speaking career, my speaking business. Yeah, like, I work with coaches and speakers and experts in their field, right?
Right.
And I basically show them how to get clients, right?
Oh.
So I teach them how to market their business online and get clients. I teach them how to speak in front of rooms and get clients. I teach them all different ways to bring clients into their business through speaking.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the things they can do is have a radio show here, so send them here too.
Perfect, that's what we'll do. They can have their own radio show, is that right?
Yeah, here,
really?
Yeah, of course.
No kidding,
so we'll talk about that.
Cool.
But
that's shameless
funny.
Self-promotion, Sam.
Exactly, what?
It.
You got to grab
it. I heard it. I had to open it up. I heard it, so I had to open it up what it was, you know?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's where we're going to go with this. You know, you got to remember, you always have to be like promoting and selling yourself and your business, you know? That's how it works. Nobody's going to do it for you. Right,
Ted? That's right.
I mean, you got to promote your own brand.
You have to promote your own brand.
Yeah. Well, you're amazing, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We
great
hope
being with
to
both
see
of
you again.
Thank you.
Now, so if people want to see you, like, the next show is when?
November 1st.
November 1st. So that's about a month from now.
Yeah.
And people can find out more information, I guess, on your website,
just go to TedMcGrathBrands.com. You'll scroll down. You'll see the Good Enough, you know, portion of it, and you click on it.
There you go. And there's also, if you just Google him, you'll find his website, I'mGoodEnough.com, and all that, with all the dashes in there. And, Ted, thank you so much for joining us, man.
You're thanks amazing. So much for having me.
Much continued success to you. And I know, obviously, you're not doing your show for the money. It's more than that because you already have the money you want, right? I would imagine.
Yeah. My show is my love.
Right.
Right. But, you know, I'll figure out ways to open up doors and monetize it. You know, it's just what I do. I think, you know, when you have art, I think it's also important to get it out there.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. And not everything you do has to be business and making money, you know?
Totally.
And you said you were interested in theater and everything. You got the creative part in you, so there you go.
You got it.
Yeah. Ted McGrath, thank you for joining us yet once again. You
Thanks
have an open
me.
Invitation.
Thanks.
Back
Thank
anytime.
You.
A very inspiring man, guys. You should go to the website, get inspired, get motivated, because if you're into drugs and stuff, you're saying no future to that, huh?
I believe there's zero future to that whatsoever.
I know. And, you know, one thing I told myself, think of all the successful people in the world. None of them is a drug addict.
Yeah.
None of them is a drinker.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, just last comment on that. Like, I don't make anybody wrong for doing that, you know?
Right.
I think people sometimes get lost, and so I don't think anybody should feel wrong for doing drugs. I think, you know, so if somebody wants to reach and find out, they should just open up their eyes a little bit and search and see, is this making me feel the way I want to feel?
Right.
And,
or maybe it's hiding a lot of things,
yeah,
like you said. You
yeah.
know? I mean,
yeah.
wow, very revealing life. All right, thanks again. Bridget, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bridget.
I understand you're going out of town, so
Chicago.
That'll be fun for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Chicago. Wow. Very
See my
cool.
best friend.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. So have a great trip. Thank you for joining us for a couple days.
You can follow me on Twitter, Bridget Fettesy.
Nice.
There you go. Spell it for them.
Bridgetphetasy. And there that's all
go.
Across social media.
You
so.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tomorrow we're going to have more great guests and a co-host, and have a great day, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.